Good evening.
Good evening.
We have a tradition in this country. Some say it stems from a conscious isolationism policy which only ended with the beginning of World War II, of largely ignoring large-scale examples of human suffering, that is say the millions of human beings who may starve to death in a given year in China or India. This is certainly not because America or Americans are heartless. It's usually blamed on the enormity of the certain set of circumstances. That is, we can grasp the horror of individual death and suffering, but when it climbs to thousands of millions, we neither accept it in terms which we can understand, or we unconsciously refuse to because it implies individual acceptance of a world which by definition is impossible for rational human beings to accept. The pragmatic approach of media in this country has been pretty much that you sell a lot more newspapers with one American three-year-old boy trapped in a well in Malvern, Long Island, than you do with 30,000 Indians dying each month in Mumbai, or as many as 13,000 Americans, mostly children, dying every day in Biafra. But somehow or another, the story of starvation in Biafra has touched most of the media and, in turn, most or at least many of us. For those of you who didn't happen to see the cover stories in Life or Look or any of the major network news stories, the situation in brief is this. When Nigeria was granted its independence by Great Britain in 1960, it was divided into three roughly tribal areas: the Mohaddan North, the Yoruba West, and the Igbo East. The largest in population and size, but most underdeveloped in terms of its people, was the Mohammedan North. The smallest in size and population was the Igbo East. One of the major problems was that the Igbos were most progressive single tribe, the whole country, and had most of the best jobs in the whole country. Because they were quick and eager to learn and were extremely ambitious. They are also predominantly Christian, which is another problem. There was a revolution, a military coup, in which Yorubas and Igbos combined to associate much of the Mohammedan leadership in the name of reform government. There was a counter-military coup in which the Igbos lost power, but the Yorubas managed to come allied with the Mohammedan North. In September 1966, there was a popular reprisal. Some say it was spontaneous, others say it was organized, in which as many as 200,000 Igbos were massacred in the Mohammedan North. Some 3 million other Igbos fled as refugees to their homeland in eastern Nigeria. Some 13 months ago, the Republic of Biafra was proclaimed, and the civil war and the starvation has been going on since. The Republic of Biafra refuses to give up because they charge, with some justification, that what's going on now is a continuation of the planning genocide which began 2 years ago. The Republic of Nigeria claims there is and never has been a hint of genocide, and that they are simply putting down a rebellion. The Republic of Nigeria insists that it will not allow food and medicine into Biafra except overland so it may inspect the shipments for any attempt to smuggle arms to the rebels. The Republic of Biafra says it fears that inspected food would be poisoned. The Republic of Biafra says nonsense. The rebels are simply using the plight of starving children as a ploy to gain world sympathy. Our guest tonight is Father Fintan Kilbright, a Holy Ghost missionary in eastern Nigeria for the past 13 years, who was nearly killed in the crash of a bootleg medicine flight at Port Harcourt a few months ago. Father Kilbright is standing by in New York to answer your questions and share your comments and conversation about starvation in Biafra. You may speak to him direct at our national number, area code 212-749-3311. And you may call us collect. There's national calls at 212-749-3311. In the New York area, call us at 866-5010. That's local calls only, please, at 866-5010. Father Kilbride, good evening, sir.
Good evening, Anna.
Good evening, Father Kilbride.
Yes, I've just
Father Kilbride, who are the bad guys in Nigeria? Question one. Is there any way to tell? Does it really make a difference? And how can we stop the starvation? Go ahead, sir.
Yeah. Well, now, first of all, who are the bad guys? It's difficult to point the accusing finger at the Nigerians without giving the impression of being immediately biased. So perhaps I can make a few comments which will let you make up your mind for yourself. Mm-hmm. You did mention the popular spontaneous riots of September-October 1966, which led to the killing of, now you had the figure incorrectly, the figure most commonly accepted is 30,000 Igbos killed, which differs very, very considerably from the figure you mentioned, 2,000.
Yes.
It is very, very much in excess of that figure. However, as I have remarked on many occasions in regard to the figures which have been compiled representing the massacres in the north of Nigeria in October 1966 and representing also the present starvation figures, it's difficult to arrive at accurate figures for these things. But insofar as it is possible and using reliable sources, the figure most usually given for the massacres of Igbos, they're the Biafrans mostly, in the north of Nigeria in October 1966 is 30,000. The other figure which you mentioned of 2 million being driven back out of the north to their homes in the east is quite accurate. Between 1.5 to 2 million people were driven out. And that, I might add, gives a lot of justification to the Biafran claim that they did not secede, if by secession you mean a voluntary withdrawal from the Federation of Nigeria. They claim, and as I say, with a lot of justification, that they were driven out of the country. It's rather ironic because I think most people, outsiders especially, outsiders of the country, would, I think, agree that the Igbos, the Biafrans, did more to unify the country than any other single group. And yet, as I say, ironically, they were the ones who were driven out. I can correct, therefore, the figure of 2,000, amended to 30,000 Biafrans killed. And that was the final atrocity which led to the Biafrans declaring their own secession.
Father Kilbride, there are many people who are very puzzled as to what is it exactly that Biafra is seeking. What are their terms?
Yeah, well, as far as I can gather, and I'm in constant touch with people who have returned from the country, and I try to keep abreast of the current moves. As I understand it, the Biafrans insist that if they have any form of association with Nigeria, it must be one which will, first of all, and before everything else, guarantee their own personal security. And I don't think that that is asking too much. I sometimes think of the atrocities and the victimization which were as a prelude to the Biafran secession, rather in the nature of a bandit who comes to a person's house and having shot the man's wife and his family and looted his house, drives him out and then wonders why he doesn't want to come back to that neighborhood. I think there's something of a parallel. It's a simple example, but I doubt if you can brand people as bandits and or as rebels and secessionists who have been forcibly driven out of their homes.
Father Kilbride, one of the things that many Americans, and I know that quite a few people when I was in Europe were concerned with, is what can they do? This is one situation in which people have the feeling that there is nothing that they can do, just sit back and watch people starve to death, particularly children. And I don't know what the count is per day of the numerous children dying in Biafra. But it's a very frustrating feeling that one doesn't quite know what to do. Do you have any suggestions?
Well, everywhere here in America, I find the same widespread frustration. People know what has to be done, but the people responsible, particularly the International Committee of the Red Cross and the other international organizations whose prime responsibility a matter of this sort is, they're frustrated beyond words at the inactivity of those humanitarian organizations. The only ones who seem to be doing anything effective are the voluntary agencies, the church agencies particularly. And I think it's a terrible slur on the good faith of the international organizations that so little has been accomplished to date. 5 weeks ago, for example, the International Committee of the Red Cross issued the first statistics which alarmed world press and news magazines and so on. And it was around that time or shortly afterwards that the cover story of life portrayed the terrible sufferings in Biafra. They told us 5 weeks ago that people were dying at the rate of 3,000 per day from starvation alone, not counting losses in battle and so on. And they also estimated that before the end of August, 2 million people would have died. This is now the 15th of August. And I noticed in the paper yesterday that the International Red Cross have said that they hope to break through the impasse in the next 10 days.
Father Kilbride, I wonder, many people have asked, is it not the United Nations, if anyone, that possibly could do anything? Do you feel that it's their role to get involved and intervene into this situation?
Yes. I have to laugh, Anna, every time I hear the Biafran-Nigerian problem called an internal problem which must be solved by the Nigerians themselves. I mean, that's utter rubbish, because Britain and Russia have been supplying arms. Sometimes they've been sending them from London and elsewhere by air. They cannot get them into Nigeria quickly enough to arm the Nigerians for the continuation of the massacres in Nigeria. Nobody at all has come out openly to help Biafra, and the one or two countries that have given recognition have been so defamed that one would wonder what terrible crime have they committed. Nobody has ever come out openly to take sides with Biafra, whereas the contrary is the case with Nigeria. Britain and Russia and other countries, Czechoslovakia, even countries like Belgium and so on, had been sending arms up to quite recently. And it's not an internal problem for the Nigerians. It's only an internal problem if it means sending arms to Biafra.
Yes.
But it just doesn't make sense.
Yes. Father Kilbride, we have several phone calls from several states standing by, but first we're going to take a break for station identification. If you would hold on, Father Kilbride, we will take a break for a minute and we'll be back momentarily with Night Call Network.
Yes.
Thank you.
More Night Call with Del Shields and guest Father Fenton Kilbride after station identification. Listen to the voices of Night Call.
We're trying to bring about change in this nation through nonviolent channels. Now, if we cannot do it through nonviolence, there are other forces that are going to lead people down a violent path, and the nation will be destroyed.
Ralph Abernathy on apathy and violence. And a white industrialist says jobs will save us from a racial inferno.
It's better to learn and earn than to burn, baby, burn. Now, these are the changes in attitude that spring from the community as a whole to try to work with these people, not just work on them, and to have industry reach into the area and try to recruit and hire the guy that's qualified and to get the other fellow to take training so he, too, can get a job.
Speak for yourself on Night Call. Speak for yourself. Collect on Night Call. Area code 212-749-3311 or 866-5010. to Father Fenton Kilbride about starvation in Biafra. Again, Del Shields.
We are in New York. I'm most sorry to say I am not Del Shields. I'm Anna Kossoff, and I'm sitting in for Mr. Shields. If it seems very strange, I have set in for the first time about 2 seconds before the show went on, so please be with us, and I must apologize. Father Kilbride, I'd like to ask one question. We were talking about the UN before we go on to our next calls. I'd like to find out, do you feel that if there was enough pressure on the UN, that perhaps they would intervene? Or what can we do as people who are concerned to make a change?
Yeah, well, I have been suggesting in recent times the necessity for political pressure. I realize that all our humanitarian appeals have fallen on deaf ears. The Vatican, the Pope himself, has appealed many times. The World Council of Churches have appealed. The different voluntary agencies around the world have appealed. Individual nations have done so. But I think that the only thing that will speak at this point is political pressure, and that's why I am appealing to the governments. And while I'm here in America, I would appeal very, very strongly to the American government for a change in its policy. At this present moment, when the world is facing a possible genocide in that country, I don't think we can stand idly by and say we're neutral. To be neutral at this point is quite out of the question.
Yes.
A person, by sheer inactivity, is taking sides with the aggressor, with the perpetrator of the genocide.
Yes. Father Kilbride, we're going to take our first call from Mrs. Moore. She's calling in from Indianapolis, Indiana, and
yes,
she's calling in from WTOC.
Yes.
Good evening, Mrs. Moore.
Good evening.
Mrs. Moore?
I'd just like to say that the Organization of African Unity is doing a lot to help the problem in Biafra. The eastern part of Nigeria was part of Nigeria, like the north and southern part of the United States. Now, if New York wanted to declare itself independent, that would in itself be a rebellion, and the United States would indeed do everything in its power to stop the rebellion. Now, I am against people starving. I have given money to 3 different agencies that are working to help the people of eastern Nigeria. But first, I would like for the minister there to tell the people the other part of the story, how the federal government met with Colonel Ojukwu, who is the leader on the eastern part of Nigeria, and nothing came out of those meetings. Now, I would like for him to give us more information on this, please.
Father Kilbride?
Yes.
Go ahead, sir.
Yeah. In the newspapers and in the other media, quite frequently there are attacks on the sincerity of Colonel Ojukwu, the leader of the Biafrans. Now, I don't know what precisely our correspondent is inquiring about. Is there any particular point?
Yes, those meetings that Colonel Ojukwu and Colonel Ogowen had in Ghana before Colonel Ojukwu illegally declared Biafra independent.
Yes. Do you know anything about the Aburi Agreement, as it was called? It was held in Aburi in Ghana. I was in Biafra at the time, or in eastern Nigeria as it was then. They took place in January, February of 1967. Are you aware of any of the agreements that were drawn up at that time?
Yes, I read about some of them in the New York Times,
yes,
and others I heard about through heads of state at the United Nations.
Yes. Well, are you aware that General Gowon completely rescinded all of those agreements, that he did not abide by any one of them? He completely reversed his position on the Aburi Agreement. I wonder, are you aware of that?
I did hear something to that effect, and I also heard that Colonel Ogowen wanted to have other consultations with Colonel Ojukwu, and these were refused. Now, this was in the beginning, before all the war and the fighting started.
Yes, that I understand, because I was in eastern Nigeria at that time. and I was aware of what was going on. But I have certain knowledge of the fact that Colonel Gowan and the other Nigerian delegates to that meeting completely rescinded what had been agreed at Buri on that occasion. And any talk of subsequent meetings to discuss the same or different problems was completely insincere, I would say, on Gowan's part. I mean, in view of the way the Buri agreement had been so readily abrogated.
Well, sir, don't you think this is an internal problem, and that all that really needs to be done is for Colonel Ojukwu, who is the leader of the Biafran people, and Colonel Ogowen, who is the leader of the Nigerian people, for them to really sit down and sort of get these problems ironed out? Now, I do understand it is wrong to starve people. It's terrible that this should happen. But
yes.
Even if, as I said before, if New York succeeded from the United States, anything that the United States could do to bring New York down to its knees to get it to talk in regards to any problem or any political situation, this would be done. Now, I think most of the Nigerian heads of state do feel sorry for the people who are starving there, but I disagree with their methods of trying to prove this. But I don't think that this country should interfere as far as the battle that's going on there between those people, because it is an internal problem. The
yes.
North and South
yeah, well,
North
if it is, you see, the point is, if it is an internal problem, why does Britain and Russia continue to send arms to those people? I mean,
okay.
There would never have been a war. Believe me, there would never have been a civil war in Nigeria
okay.
if it had not been for the intervention of Britain and of Russia.
Okay, now, sir, may I recall one other thing that happened there?
Yes.
Who was the first person to start bombing the area? Now, the Biafran people had a jet plane. Nobody knew where it came from. And the Nigerian people were not trained to operate a jet plane of this type.
Yes.
And this jet plane was bombing the Nigerian. Now, this was in all the newspapers now, and it came over the UPI, API, over Reuters, and many other news presses, too. Now, they were the first one. The Biafran people were the first ones to bomb the Nigerian area.
Yeah. With how many planes?
Huh?
With how many planes?
They had one plane.
Yeah,
that
one
was,
plane. And
that was a modern bomber. Nigeria did not have not one modern bomber.
Yeah, well,
bomber.
Wait, no, wait.
Okay.
I have, again, certain information, and I would imagine that the information I have is a little bit more reliable than the one you have.
Okay.
And it is to this effect. The Biafran bomber which was used on that occasion was a former Nigeria Airways F-27.
Uh-huh.
Now, the F-27, as you know, is a commercial airliner. It's a turboprop. It is not a sophisticated bomber.
Yes.
Now, admittedly, the Biafrans were the first to start the aerial bombing.
Thank you very much.
Yeah. All right. Well, now, further to that, do you happen to know what happened to that bomber? The bombs which were used were so primitive that one of them exploded inside the plane while it was on a mission over Lagos. The plane blew up and crashed in flames.
Mm-hmm.
That is the simple explanation of that story. I don't deny that the Biafran plane was the first one in the air.
Mm-hmm.
We saw subsequent to that the reprisals of the Nigerian Air Force, which, of course, is nothing other than Russian MIGs and Aleutian bombers,
mm-hmm.
which have been bombing civilian targets indiscriminately for the last 14 months. If you call that reprisal, all right, it is reprisal. I can give you the statistics for the first 2 months of May. During that time, there were 1,250 civilian casualties as a result of the bombing raids of the Nigerians. I mean, again, if that is a reprisal, okay. But I think there should be some proportion between the reprisal and the original attack which prompted it, if you like.
Well, I'll tell you what, sir. I don't know if you are familiar with Mohammed Speaks newspaper. I read all newspapers, really, but I was quite surprised 2 weeks ago to see pictures of Nigerian soldiers, civilians, and women and children, too, who had been massacred by Biafran soldiers. Now, it was quite, this I was surprised to see, because I had not seen any of these pictures in any of the other papers in the United States.
Yes.
Now, don't get me wrong. I think this country should help in every way possible to get medicine there for the Biafran people,
yes,
because I do know that women and children are dying there by the thousands daily. Now,
yes,
I agree that we are responsible, because this is a country of plenty. Most of us don't know what it means,
yes,
to be faced with starvation. Now, I just wanted you, though, to tell the people both sides of the story, but you have a case where black brothers are fighting black brothers, and where this whole problem could be ironed out if both of them would go to the conference table and talk this whole problem out. It,
yes,
it is a sad thing to have happened, but
yes,
it has happened, and I do, as I said before, I do think we should help. They need medicine that has not been able to go through. They need food that has not been able to go through. And the children are always the ones to die first.
Yeah.
Now, this, I think this is what you're here for anyway.
Yeah, well, no, the only thing I would say to that is that many, many attempts have been made in recent times to bring about a ceasefire. And I have said this publicly on many, many occasions. To my mind, it is hopeless to think that you can feed 10 million people by flying in at night time. Two, three, or four planes carrying each time about 10 tons.
Mm-hmm.
For a population of 10 million people, you would need to fly in between 1,500 and 2,000 tons per day, something on the lines of the Berlin airlift many years ago. The present trickle represents just that. It's in no way adequate to meet the desperate needs of the people.
Mm-hmm.
Now, the only real and effective way of saving these starving people is for an immediate ceasefire. And I have been begging for that for many weeks past, because I realize that any talks of mercy corridors or what have you are quite inadequate to meet the starvation problem.
Well, one other question, please, now stop hogging the show.
Yeah.
What assurance have you gotten from the Organization of African Unity? Have you talked with them?
Well, I know no more about the workings of the Organization for African Unity
you
than
don't?
Anybody else from the newspapers.
You don't? They have an office right there in New York City.
Yes.
They have an office right there, and the Organization
yes.
of African Unity, as you know, consists of leaders of Africa from all African countries, and they are united together for the sole purpose of trying to solve political problems.
Yeah,
now,
but
what
concrete steps have they taken in the last 14 months?
They
to bring
met
this?
Here in Ethiopia when 2 weeks ago?
Pardon?
Didn't the Organization of African Unity meet in Ethiopia 2 weeks ago?
Yes, but they're still in session.
Oh, they are still in session.
They have invited.
They are trying to do something there.
They have invited the leaders of both sides, General Gowon and Colonel Ojukwu, to meet them at Addis Ababa next Monday.
Mm-hmm.
But the latest information I have is that General Gowon has refused to go.
Mrs. Moore, thank you very much for calling.
Thank you.
Father Kilbride, would you hold on, please, for ourselves to station identification, and we will be back with Night Call momentarily.
More Night Call with Del Shields and guest Father Fenton Kilbride after station identification. Next week on Night Call. On Monday, the most visible minority, your policeman. John Harrington of the Fraternal Order of Police says police are being shot like fish in a barrel, and he wants to stage a two-day nationwide walkout of all police officers in protest to what he calls lack of support in dealing with racial violence. Tuesday, economist Robert Theobald on the guaranteed annual income. Wednesday, Democratic Senator, presidential candidate George McGovern of South Dakota. Thursday, historian William Katz and whatever happened to black history. And Friday, psychologist William Greer on the reasons for black rage. All this next week on Night Call, the new nationwide call-in show on vital issues that brings you the experts with the answers to your direct questions. Speak for yourself. Collect on Night Call. Area code 212-749-3311 or 866-5010. To Father Fenton Kilbride about starvation in Biafra. again, Del Shields.
Good evening. I am not Del Shields. I'm sitting in for Mr. Shields, and I'm Anna Kossoff. Our national telephone number is 212-749-3311. That's 212-749-3311, and you may call us collect. The local number is 866-5010. The local number is 866-5010, and we welcome the stations that join us the second half hour of Night Call. Our guest tonight is Father Kilbride. And Father Kilbride, before we go on to our further calls, I'd like to ask you, Haile Selassie has offered to invite both parties of Nigeria and Biafra to sit down at a conference table in Ethiopia. I understand that this was denied. Do you have any explanation for that, or do you feel that the offer was not feasible at the time?
Yeah, well, I think the offer I referred to just a few moments ago was one of 2 or 3 days ago. Is that the one you're referring to?
Yes, yes.
Yeah, well, as far as I know, it was accepted by Colonel Ojukwu and the Biafrans, but not by the Nigerians.
What reason do you feel is the reason that they did not accept the offer?
I presume it's the same reason as stopped the Kampala talks and the London talks and any other talks that were held previously. They are not going to accept anything except the complete denial and rejection of secession by the Biafrans.
Yes.
And the Biafrans are equally determined never again to trust their security to the Nigerians.
Father Kilbride, there has been a rumor, or it may be a fact, I don't know, I wonder what your feeling on this is, that France has been supporting Biafra with planes or arms and what have you. Is this true?
Well, certainly not with planes. It may have been supplying small arms and so on.
Yeah.
I presume the Biafrans have been getting their arms supplies from some place. There's no doubt about that. And France has been mentioned quite frequently in that connection. But certainly there has been no open help to Biafra, as, for example, the help of Britain and Russia and Czechoslovakia and other countries to Nigeria.
Yes.
That has been open, and there has been no secret about it.
Yes. Father Kilbride, we're going to welcome our next call from New York. Mr. Frank Onanda is listening to WLIB.
Yes.
Good evening, Mr. Onanda. Mr. Onanda?
Hello?
Yes. Good evening, sir. What is your question?
Father Kilbride, in view, about 8 years ago, I had the occasion to attend an institute up in Carmel, New York, which was attended by a Nigerian black man.
Yes.
And at the time, he said that it was his opinion that the missionaries, Christian missionaries, were a form of imperialism.
Yes.
And not so much as a moral of value being put into the country.
Yes.
And I asked him what he anticipated in view of his opinion. And he said that Nigeria will be divided and that there will be evidence that the richest parts of Nigeria,
yes,
will form fragments.
Yes.
Much like has been the precedent and the facts throughout history.
Yes.
Now, I want to know, why do you feel qualified to talk about the black man's situation in Nigeria? And where was the absence of your qualification to talk about the black man in South Africa and in Rhodesia?
Yeah, well, a simple answer to that question is that I have not lived either in South Africa or in Rhodesia. I condemn very strongly any injustice, whether it is to a black man or to a white man or to anybody else, on the basis of race or of for any other reason whatsoever.
You know, would you say then that you are condemning equally as strong the situation of the, not the black man, but a yellow man in Vietnam, as strongly as you're recommending the situation, or as strongly as you are talking against the situation of the black man in Nigeria?
I would. If I understood the facts of the case, I would condemn injustice wherever I see it.
I have lived for 13 years in eastern Nigeria, and I know the situation there pretty well, and I think after 13 years I should be qualified to speak of the situation there, not only the humanitarian problems of the country, but in a certain sense, the political aspirations of the people also.
So, would you say then, if you have been there for 13 years...
Yes, I have lived there for 13 years.
Okay, then, in view of that fact, would you say that you have spoken up about the British legacy in terms of unifying and leaving a legacy of technical advancement, moral advance, a unifying quality in all of Nigeria throughout the 13 years? Would you say then that if you had been there for 13 years, that you have seen the British or whoever, whatever white country has been occupying Nigeria, has left a legacy of unification in that country?
I wouldn't think so. I would say that when the British left in 1960 and Nigeria became a separate entity within the Commonwealth, I would say that there was built into the system the seeds of disruption that grew during the past 8 years.
Then I would ask you, where was your voice as public as it is right now, as more world-renowned as it's being communicated throughout the world? Where then was your voice, in your opinion, 13 years ago, so that we could have forestalled the problem that has obtained today?
Yeah, well, I have been speaking out against this, and so have many others also, over the past several years. Insofar as any injustice was visible, we have spoken out consistently against it.
As long as it's visible, I know we can only talk about the visible.
Yes.
However, there's another question I want to ask you.
Yes.
The starvation of the Biafran children, of course, is deplorable.
Yes.
But let me ask you, would you say that more of the natural wealth of the country of Nigeria is to be found in Biafra as opposed to... Now, I'm using Biafra more because I have been indoctrinated to use it, because Biafra is yet non-existent as far as I'm concerned.
Yes.
It is still a rebel movement.
Yes.
But would you say that Biafra contains most of the general wealth of Nigeria?
Well, perhaps I could answer the question in this way. I lived in the southern part of eastern Nigeria, around Port Harcourt particularly, both among the Igbo majority tribe and among the minorities in that area. And that also happens to coincide with the oil-producing area of Biafra.
So
2 years ago, when it was eastern Nigeria, I asked a Dutch petroleum engineer who was working for a big oil company at that time, how does the eastern Nigerian, it was then eastern Nigeria, the eastern Nigerian oil supply compare with other world markets? And he said, there is a greater oil potential in Biafra, in eastern Nigeria, than in the whole of the Middle East.
Yes.
In other words, there are oil interests being protected in this war, and that is, I would say, the involvement of Britain and other countries.
Yes.
On the side of Nigeria.
This is one of the concerns that I have, you see, because you have said that it is true that in terms of just merely today we agree upon that there is this potential wealth. Then, assuming that there should be an equitable distribution of this potential wealth,
yes,
in all of Nigeria,
yes,
then I guess you and I can both say that it would be beneficial to everybody.
Yeah, well, you see, the point
But I haven't finished my point.
Oh, I'm sorry.
In contrast to the imbalance of the possession of wealth in South Africa, to the exclusion of the natural black man in South Africa, so that I see something here, if not directly, but almost by proxy. That is, someone who is able to represent a combine, a cartel, saying that we the Igbo want to be independent because of one, two, three, and many different things, sometimes like exists in the United States. But that's another coincidence. It appears that whatever the United States happens to put their finger on, there happens to be a North Korea, a South Korea, a North Vietnam, a South Vietnam, and wherever the United States is involved, there happens to be a North and a South. It seems to be like an infection of the North and of the South here in this country, but it's merely a coincidence. What I want to say is that there happens to be such an overwhelming possession of wealth in the country of South Africa, which is controlled by the white man, and even in Africa, the black man cannot be completely independent. Even in Africa, the black man cannot be completely self-controlled. I think that I see a pattern here as far as I'm concerned.
Yes. Well, I think it's one of the great tragedies of this war in Nigeria, Biafra, that the unfortunate people who are fighting this war, to them it's a tribal, perhaps even a religious war in some respects. I think it is very, very tragic to think that they're being used as pawns by the bigger oil companies which are keeping this war going.
Mr. Ananda, thank you very much for calling. Father Kilbride, we're going to take our next phone call from Jacksonville, Florida. Mr. King is calling in from WRHC. Mr. King?
Good evening.
Good evening, sir.
Father Kilbride, I have perhaps two, maybe three ideas that have come to me. Having gone to school with African students in North Carolina when I was at Dr. C. Smith University, but I noticed a difference at that particular time that the tribalism of the students, and there were blood feuds going on at that time, at one time that the Dean of Bend was going to put two different Africans from different tribes in the same room, and the one from another tribe said, don't do that because one would be dead the next day. I'm wondering that if a blood feud is going on between the Africans and others from other sections of Nigeria, knowing that there are 150 some odd different tribes in Africa, what part does this play in the overall revolution or civil war in Biafra and Nigeria?
Father Kilbride, if you would you hold your answer, sir, until we have a chance for station identification, and we will be back in a moment with Night Call. Hold on, please.
More Night Call with Del Shields and guest Father Fenton Kilbride after station identification. Monday night on Night Call, in Oakland, California, Cleveland, Ohio, and New York City, police officers have been ambushed and shot down in cold blood. And now police leaders are proposing a two-day nationwide police walkout to protest what they consider to be a lack of community support in dealing with racial violence. Speak for yourself Monday night to John Harrington, the national president of the 137,000-member National Fraternal Order of Police. Harrington says when police are being shot like fish in a barrel, it's time to do something. And Harrington says he's going to hold a conference next month to consider a nationwide police walkout. Speak for yourself direct to the head of the National Fraternal Order of Police on the most visible minority, your policeman. Monday night on Night Call. Speak for yourself. Collect on Night Call, area code 212-749-3311 or 866-5010 to Father Fenton Kilbride about starvation in Biafra. Again, Del Shields.
And sitting in for Mr. Shields, I'm Anna Kassoff, and we have on our wire Father Kilbride, and calling in from Jacksonville, Florida, is Mr. King. Go ahead, Father Kilbride, you were going to answer.
Yes. The question has been asked whether the tribalism of Nigeria in itself led to the present civil conflict. Now, I found it just a little bit difficult to follow the inflection of the questioner's voice, and I hope I haven't misunderstood the question. He mentioned 150 different tribes in Nigeria. The number is actually 250. If he is speaking of the different languages and dialects of the country. As I said earlier tonight, when the British left in 1960 and Nigeria became an independent entity within the Commonwealth, there was left behind the seeds of dissension which were to grow stronger and stronger until the present
conflict became, in a sense, almost inevitable. That is because of the very great variety and difference, tribalistic differences among the peoples of Nigeria. The three main ethnic groups of the Hausa Fulani northern group, the Yorubas in the west, with the other minority groups, and the Igbos in the east, were so diversified, they were so very, very different, that it was difficult to see how they could ever remain for long as one nation. If you could understand, for example, some superpower coming to take control of Europe for 20, 50, or 60 years, and then suddenly withdrawing, to expect Europe to continue as a single entity would be expecting too much. And I think that the diversity is even the greater in the present country of Nigeria, where
Mr.
you have
King?
Not only the diversity of language and so on, but the whole cultural background is so very different.
Mr.
The Northerners, the Hausa Fulani particularly, are Bantus from East Africa. The Yorubas and the Igbos in the southern part of Nigeria are indigenous to that part of West Africa.
Mr. King, does it answer your question, sir?
Yes, basically, one other question. Due to the wealth of the country, the section of Biafra, it's similar to other revolutions that have taken place in different countries. Do you feel that countries in the free world should interfere with internal strife within a nation?
I don't, and if Britain and Russia had not interfered, there would have been no internal strife in Nigeria at all. They would have settled their own differences. I'm quite certain of that.
Okay, Mr. King?
Yes, sir.
Thank you very much for calling, sir.
Thank you.
Father Kilbride, we're going to take our next phone call from New York City. Mr. Tilden is waiting by on WLIB. Mr. Tilden?
Yes.
Good evening, sir. Go ahead.
Well, there's so many things I can say.
Well, begin at the beginning.
Yes, I listen to Ms. Moore out there in Indiana and Mr. Fernandez here in New York. The matter of the Balkanization of Nigeria has always interested me. Mr. Hernandez seems to attack the whites' qualification to think about Africa and do anything about it. It seems now that the original Balkanization of West Africa and the setting up of arbitrary boundaries of what is now called Nigeria has somehow now become sacred.
Make that remark.
Exactly.
Balkanization is spoken of as something wicked and obviously against the best interests of any group that seeks self-determination. I don't know why that should be. Anybody who has lived in Nigeria must see the tremendous divergence, the great tribalistic differences in the different ethnic groups of the north, west, and east.
And Mrs. Moore out there in Indiana reading her Mohammedan newspaper may have overlooked a couple of things about the Igbos themselves. I think it may be important to mention. I lived in Nigeria for several years, and I think that I had a chance to observe.
Which part of Nigeria were you in?
I lived primarily in the western part, in Yoruba country, but at that time, Father, there were many Igbos there, that is, the Igbos that spread all over the country pretty much, and of course this was a source of a great deal of antagonism. I found them to be aggressive, industrious, bumptious people who were relatively dependable in the handling of money, certainly responsible in the discharge of their jobs. And one thing I know about
is
them,
is it your opinion, pardon my asking a question, but is it your opinion, I'd like to corroborate my own ideas on this subject, is it your opinion that the Igbos brought this on themselves in any sense?
Oh, very definitely, totally on themselves by being really un-Nigerian in a way. That is to say, they believed in mass education of their women as well as their men. They,
in other words, by accepting,
they like their children, which is unusual.
By accepting education and continuing their own progressive ways.
Well, exactly that.
Yes.
That is to say, they attracted lightning. In this way, the industriousness of them, the progressivism, the conviction that perhaps by hard work and education they could get someplace, raise themselves above the poverty which was their lot, and so on. this has angered a good many of the other tribes.
Yeah, but
Nigeria.
would you agree with me that by comparison the other tribes were quite indolent and lazy?
In some respects, some were, yes, by comparison, certainly.
Yeah, well, that's what I mean,
yeah.
By comparison.
But in education, for example, I'm mindful of the fact that in the eastern region at the time, before there was a secession, there were almost 300 secondary schools in a population of approximately 14 million people, whereas in the entire northern region, with a population in excess of 25 million people, there were less than 70 secondary schools. People have what they want. If they want to educate themselves, they will. If they don't, they won't.
Yes.
In the city of Onitsha, which was an all-Igbo city primarily, there were more educated women in the city of 300,000 people than in the literate women, those who could read and write, in the city of 300,000 people than there were in the entire northern region of more than 20 million people. This is an astonishing statistic, and I think that Mrs. Moore might well pay attention to these things.
Yes.
Mr. Tilden?
Yes.
Are you finished, sir?
Yes, I think so.
Okay, thank you very much for calling, sir.
Okay.
Father Kilbride, we have one more call from Mr. Bond, and he's calling in from St. Louis, and he's listening to Night Call from KNOX. Mr. Bond?
Yes.
Good evening, sir.
I wanted to ask your guest how long ago has it been since he's been to Nigeria and Biafra?
I was there on a brief visit during the month of February. It was on that occasion that I was bringing medical supplies and food from New York through Lisbon to Biafra, and the plane I was on crashed. It crash landed and burst into flames. I escaped by some kind of miracle. But I stayed on for some weeks during the month of February and returned to this country about 2 months ago to continue to try and get help for the beleaguered Biafrans.
My reason for asking is various media in this country have pictured this starvation idea to a terrible way. They've showed small children and hundreds of them with, you know, just completely suffering from malnutrition.
Yes.
Is this the case in both sections, or...
It is certainly the case in Biafra at the present moment. It is also the case in the former territory of the Biafrans, which has now been overrun by the Nigerians. So in those so-called liberated areas, the condition is just as bad, possibly even worse in some ways.
Yes,
no attempt has been made by the Nigerians with all their resources and wealth and so on from Britain and Russia. No attempt apparently has been made to bring in food to those areas, and it is through those very areas that the Nigerians are now suggesting that mercy corridors be opened up for sending in relief to the Biafrans. Even from that point of view, it's quite impracticable.
Yes, I was in the Peace Corps for a year in Togo.
Yes.
And I was not fortunate enough to get over to Nigeria, and now I wish I would have.
Yes.
But we found various levels of malnutrition in Togo and the neighboring Gold Coast.
Yes.
But nothing compared to what we've seen in some of the national magazines and the newspapers here. It must really be bad.
And it is. It's really unbelievable.
What,
I have been in constant touch, even though I'm out of Biafra since February. I have been in constant touch with our own missionaries who have come out and other people whose evaluation of the situation I accept. And I keep constantly abreast of the changing fortunes in that unfortunate country. One thing that almost frightens me is the grassroots determination. The entire people are determined to die, if necessary, by starvation rather than to give in. They will never, never give in and subject themselves to the caprice of the Nigerians.
Near what towns would you say the element of starvation is the worst in the secessionist area?
Well,
around
the area is so very, very small, really, that it's easy, in a sense, to pinpoint it. It's between the towns of Owerri and Aba, Omahia, and bordering on Onitsha. It's a very, very small area, about
7,000 or 8,000 square miles, and you have inside in that tropical rainforest 10 million people literally starving to death.
Say the means were available to you with these...
Mr. Byrne, I'm so sorry, but I'm going to have to cut you off because we're going to have to get off the air in a couple of minutes.
Right.
I want to thank you very much for calling, sir.
Enjoy your program in St. Louis very much.
Thank you very much. We appreciate it very much. Father Kilbright, I want to thank you ever so much for being on Dell's show. Mr. Shields is unable to be with us tonight, and I was sitting in for him. And I also want to thank you ever so much for enlightening us on a subject that there's an awful lot of confusion about. And I think more and more people are becoming concerned and feel that they can do very, very little about. Thank you very much, Father Kilbright,
and
thank you for being
with
us. Well, if you would like to contribute to the relief of starvation in Biafra, you can send your checks or money orders to Church World Service, Box 66, Madison Square Station, New York 10010. That's Church World Service, Box 66, Madison Square Station, New York 10010. Catholic Relief Service, Empire State Building, New York 10001. That's Catholic Relief Service, Empire State Building, New York 10001. The Jewish Emergency Effort for Biafra Relief, Box 2802, Grand Central Station, New York 10017. Jewish Emergency Effort for Biafra Relief, Box 2802, Grand Central Station, New York 10017. And since you already got a pencil at hand, why not take down Night Call's address, too, and drop us a line about what sort of guests and issues you would like us to program in the future. It's Night Call, Ponoma, New York, 10970. That's Ponoma, P-O-N-O-M-A, New York, 10970. Next week's guest will be John Harrington, the president of the National Paternal Order of Police, economist Father Theobald, Democratic senator and presidential candidate George McGovern, historian William Katz, psychiatrist William Greer, and this is Anna Kasov sitting in for Mr. Shields in New York. And have a good weekend, good night, and peace for Mr. Shields.
Night Call, the new nationwide listener call-in show on vital issues. Monday night, same time, same station, the most visible minority, your policeman, with the head of the Fraternal Order of Police, John Harrington. Listen Monday night. Discuss freely and responsibly your own personal opinions. Speak for yourself on Night Call. Produced by the United Methodist Church, presented with National Council of Churches, National Catholic Office for Radio and Television, American Jewish Committee, and Urban Coalition.